Blog Talk Radio.
We're shy of one horse.
You brought too many.
Thank you.
Wednesday evening, BASN Newsroom is on the air. Good evening, good evening, good evening, and welcome to another edition of Soul Tree Radio and the Raw. I'm your host, Michael Lewis Ingram, and as always, it is good to be with you. Soul Tree Radio and the Raw, proudly sponsored by BASN Newsroom and the assault force of journalists that comprise the Black Athlete Sports Network. Get all the good shit, the who, what, when, where, why, and sometimes how, right here, right now, at www.BASNNewsroom, all one phrase, .net.org.com, or .wordpress.com. We got an interesting menu tonight, and some very disturbing stuff on the ice, as well as with the national pastime, supposedly.
Yeah.
But before we get on with that, we have to first condemn the putty tats. I used to say the Detroit Lions, but we know for 66 years,
they're
a snake bit, as my brother Gary Norris Gray would say. They're a snake bit by a curse regarding their best player at that time, Bobby Lane. Detroit came up shaky with the funds, and he said, fuck Detroit. They're cursed. You don't care about them, and they're not going to win until they show out some money. Well, 66 years later, they were almost Lions. They were clawing their way back to the top. They were growling and scratching, and they got up 24-7 on San Francisco in the conference final.
Yes, sir.
It was like the Lions were like, meow, bitch, we're kicking your ass. And then all of a sudden, the fix was there. They were putty tats once again. Gang, they had one job. One job. That's all they had to do. And they didn't do it. What was the takeaway?
I'm going to play this. You have a 27-7 lead.
24-7.
Yeah, you're on the 35-40 yard line.
Right.
Fourth down, you kick a field goal to make it a 3-Z. This is why I can't stand analytics. I'm gonna kick an egg to the buttons.
Uh-huh.
Analytics lost that game.
The analytics will get you. But, you know, full disclosure, Gary, my wife and I were sitting there watching, and it's gonna be our six month anniversary tomorrow. So happy anniversary, Nauta, I love you. But we decided when the playoffs hit, as Tony and Reggie are coming into the mix, we were going to do two or three things. If Detroit won the Super Bowl, we were moving to Detroit. I mean, we were serious about this. I contacted a couple of my colleagues, Rick Hampton, and me and his son. I contacted them about a land contract to buy a house. All they had to do was win. It looked like they were in good shape, and then they bitched up. I am the press.
You know, it's interesting. Gentlemen, peace and blessing to the deacons on defensive justice. The thing that makes me laugh is that, yeah, they had an opportunity to win the game, but it's something about being there before. Case in point, Baltimore Ravens was clearly punked in their own stadium. When you got a field goal kicker say, I was doing this for 12 years, and I've been out on the other team's sideline, and I'm kicking field goals. And you're going to antagonize the defending Super Bowl champion. And they saw when Kelsey and them kicked the helmet and kicked the field goal tee. They said they were serious. They meant business. One team was all about showman and getting the applause and saying, we're going to roll our helmets out and win. Just like the 49ers. these teams have been there before. Look at the organizations. And I got to say this. Gary, you wrote a great article about black coaches. Well, guess what? The way things are looking, I would not be surprised if a brother gets a job with the Commanders because they're so-called glory picks.
That's what.
Yeah, but they're glory picks.
Four new African-American coaches.
Yeah, this is a new trend.
I was going to bring it up. Because 2022 head coach of Miami Dolphins, Flores, sued the NFL. Why did he sue the NFL? He sued the NFL because he thought he was not getting a fancy head coaching job.
Gary understood, but you can't strong arm these motherfuckers into making them give you a job. Yeah, the Rooney Rule was smoking mirrors.
But they were not giving any black coaches a job. And that 2021,
yeah, you can thank the Houston Texans for that because I believe truly when they saw the way that young man turned the program around, that embarrassed a lot of these owners.
Yep.
And a lot of these owners now are saying we need to move forward.
But I gotta say, nobody promises you a job. I'm sorry, Tony. Nobody guarantees you a job. Nobody promises you a job. And the whole premise of these black coaches getting a job is contingent on one thing and one thing only. Does your employer think you're the right person for the job? If that doesn't happen, your chances are shit.
And you know, the one thing that's never changed over the years is just being given the opportunity. More than anything else, you look at the last three hires. D'Amico Ryans, you know, did his thing in San Fran, and then when given opportunity, he showed what he can do.
Yeah.
Antonio Pierce, given the opportunity, you know, got an even smaller sample size, but again, showing what he could do. And the Raiders, who are probably still butthurt from the last time they had a chance to get this right, and it is to his advantage. And see, what's great to me is I love the fact that he brought in Marvin Lewis as sort of like his second lieutenant to sort of, you know, oversee all the other things because now he's going to have
back him. Back up. Hold on. Who brought in Marvin Lewis?
Antonio Pierce. One of his first hires.
Oh, wow, didn't know that one.
Yeah, one of his first hires was his literally the day he was given the interim job. He said, oh, by the way, I'm bringing in Marvin Lewis as I don't know if it's defensive coordinator or linebacker coach or whatever, but basically he's like his first lieutenant, you know, absolutely. And you know, love
hey,
him or hate.
Tell Stephen A. Smith that since he's been dogging Marvin Lewis.
See, you've mistaken me for someone who actually listens to Stephen A. Smith. So I'm probably
That just slipped off.
No,
he serves his masters very well. You know what I'm saying?
I stopped doing ESPN rehab with y'all. Y'all just gonna have to just deal with that. Mr. Mayo. In Foxborough land, he even brought in another brother as like his assistant. So the thing is, it's about being given opportunities. But once they get the opportunities, do like everybody else.
They gotta do it.
Well, but see, here's the thing. with New England, they're not looking for him to set the world on fire the first year. I don't think it's the sort of thing where if he has a terrible season, they're going to fire him after one season. As much of a 24-carat butthole he is, he's about winning. He's about winning because I think probably the best thing that happened to Mayo was that he wasn't Belichick. Now, he may try to, let's face it, it was the power play thing. Matter of fact, to be quite honest, one of the reasons why Belichick doesn't have a job now is because he wants to run the show. And
right.
there are some teams that don't want to hire him. But that's another hour conversation in and of itself. But that being said, D'Amico, Pierce, and all these guys, even some of the other fellows, even some of the assistants this year who have shined. You got to remember that Ravens have. Like four different black assistants who are probably, maybe not this year, but maybe within another year or so, will be hot. May likely be hired for head coaching job. I mean, T. Martin's been doing it on a college and a pro level. It's been more than about time for him to be given the keys to the kingdom somewhere. But there's still more work to be done, but at least now, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and not Mighty Joe Young holding a flashlight.
Can I ask you guys a question? No, seriously. Would this happen without the Flores lawsuit? I don't think so.
I'll say this. It's just. Is it a factor? Yes. Is it the main factor? No. I think the bigger – let's put it this way. You cannot poo-poo it, but I'll be quite honest with you. I think D'Amico doing what he did and Pierce doing what he did. Because, see, at the end of the day, it goes back to what Mike says. You're never going to completely change the mindset.
Exactly.
Mike Tomlin's been fired 957,000 times in his years in Pittsburgh. The guy's won
and
a Super Bowl.
And you know Steelers fans that hate the fact he's the coach.
Exactly. But that's the crazy part about it. You're never going to change the mindset. But they still, at the end of the day, they still want to win. And needless to say, Houston, the future for Houston – and the Raiders are bright. If by some chance Antonio gets himself a human quarterback, they're going to be a dangerous team. And see,
exactly.
Houston already has the quarterback. Now he's just got to get some guys that can stop somebody on an occasion. Because that's the thing. We always hear the phrase, teams are reflective of their coach's image.
Right.
And you saw how those guys rallied for Pierce, on the field, and even God bless them, that Houston defense, they tried, but everybody knew that was going to be their weakness coming in. The bonus is that they have a franchise quarterback. Now here's the scary thing. You put Vegas's defense with Houston's offense,
that's a hell of a team.
That's a hell of a team.
That's a team that definitely can fight. But the Detroit situation was one that really turned out to be a head-scratcher. I mean, we knew there was improvement, but we didn't know how far that improvement was. The WWE aspect of the NFL was out there in full effect, and I did not like what I saw. It was like I said, Detroit was poised. Everything was going for them.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe how just as much as they looked like lions in the first half. They looked like putty cats.
It didn't help that Dan Campbell also tried to become Newt Rockne in some of those things. But you know what? To his credit, he's been doing, you know, forgive my French, he's been doing that shit all year. And yep. It's just, you know, it's like, you know, I'm reminded of the Lloyd Bridges line in Airplane. Pick the wrong damn week to stop sniffing glue.
You got that right. If it pleases the court, we must come out and bring out the charges against the putty tats. Your Honor, to please the motherfucking court, I wish to charge the Detroit Lions with felony assholery, dumb fuckery, and scumbaggery in the first degree. They had a situation where they seriously could have won the game, and they blew it. And I'm dead serious. My wife and I had plans to move to Detroit. I mean, I even called my friend Ricky Hampton in Detroit and told Ricky, see if you can hook a brother up with a realtor to find it. And there's some nice homes in Detroit that were at a good price. But bottom line, after they blew it, it's like, I can't be a party to that. No. I submit into evidence Exhibit A, a picture of Commissioner Goodell canoodling with some of these San Francisco fans in the game. And, you know, you got the feeling from looking at the photo that the fix was in. I don't know if you remember this, but long, long ago, my mother was a wrestling fan. And there was a show called Championship Wrestling. And one of the wrestlers,
WWE,
was a guy named Haystacks Calhoun.
That's Calhoun.
Now, Haystacks was fucking huge. He made Jason Whitlock look like a swimsuit model. I mean, he was huge. but when he came out there, they couldn't. He was like the Blob in X-Men. You could hit him, but you weren't going to feel anything. And if he sat on your ass, that was it. All you had to do is plant his ass on the ground on top of people. It was 1, 2, 3, the mattress over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Mike,
do you remember Haystacks Calhoun's most famous movie cameo?
No.
Oh, you got to remember that.
Which one?
The ending of Requiem for a Heavyweight. Who is the wrestler who fights Anthony Quinn in the closing scene of the movie?
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Calhoun.
Shit. Holy shit! Jeez, I forgot about that. Hey, but you know, again, Haystacks was huge. I mean, he wasn't named Haystacks for a reason. He wasn't a stack. He was big enough for stacks. And the XFL, when it came around, they confused the fact that football fans and wrestling fans were the same animal. And that was not true, and it proved not to be true. Now, even with this merge, it doesn't change the fact that there is a WWE aspect to the NFL. They decided they want them. They picked their white heroes, and now they decided that the all-shucks white boy from Iowa State, Brock Purdy, is going to be the starting quarterback for San Francisco in Super Bowl 58 against Patrick Mahomes. Now Mahomes has started every Super Bowl he's played in, and he's been in the postseason every year he's been in the league. That's a pretty good average. And if he's not the GOAT, he damn sure is close to being the GOAT. But the NFL makes no bones about the fact that they have scripted this. We've seen at least three occasions where fans are like, what the fuck is going on? Where results of games, results of officiating, bad officiating, have put a bad taste in the mouth of fans who not only bet on the games but are rooting for the games, and the product is looking very shaky. I said shenanigans going on, Tom.
Yeah, it's you know, it's not so much that the Niners came back, but that happened way too quick. I mean, it reminded me of one of them golden when the Warriors were in the middle of their dynasty and they would go on one of their runs and you'd be looking back and all of a sudden you're sitting around, where are my pants? And it was just too much. And see this is why the NFL doesn't have a grasp of their fandom. I think a lot of, you know, let's put it this way. I think a lot of people would have loved to have seen the Lions get to the Super Bowl.
Especially Detroit fans.
Oh, yeah, but I'm just saying, I mean, even I think, you know, there's always after your team gets eliminated or if the team doesn't make the playoffs, everybody sort of gravitates to one team. And I think, you know, I think it was clear that Detroit was becoming that sort of sentimental favorite.
Right.
Uh-huh. But as the NFL likes to do, they still think, you know, I'll say it before and I'll say it again. The greedy bastard factor is alive and well at on Park Avenue and in Vegas. And,
now, think about this, gentlemen. The Kansas City Chiefs and the San Francisco 49ers are playing in, guess where? The Oakland Raider home field.
Yep.
The two most hated teams by the Raiders are the Kansas City Chiefs and the San Francisco 49ers.
You're right about that.
Football teams are being
I guess we can expect Black Sunday 2, where a former Oakland Raider threatens to blow up the stadium just as the game is ending.
It's no accident that the Oakland Raider San Francisco 49er rivalry has been squelched by the most part by the league.
It's been that dynamic.
And nobody really has said a lot about it. But the fact that Oakland and Kansas City was probably the best rivalry in the AFL.
Yes.
Before the merger, also leaves a bad taste in the mouth. That Pierce came back and won as a coach wasn't so much the winning as much as how he won. He won in a brash manner, and he won in a manner that would befit the Raider fan saying, yeah, we like this guy. We got to keep him. So it'd be interesting to see what the Raiders do down the road. But Super Bowl 58 is definitely a ripoff. And the reason I say that is because the pay-per-view aspect has already been put in the mix. Paramount signed a $110 million contract for NFL coverage. They showed one game. Now, if you go to Paramount's site, it's $5.99 per month. And if you get what they call Paramount Plus, which includes a lot of other shit, it's $11.99 a month. Now,
by the way, Mike, emphasis on shit too, by the way.
Yeah. So that one playoff game that they showed that was exclusive on Paramount, they pulled in enough money to make their profit almost five times over. Now, how obscene is that?
And who is Paramount? Who is Paramount? Oh, my.
Oh, it's CBS.
Who is Paramount?
CBS.
Who is the owner of Paramount?
Off the top of my head, I'm not sure.
It's a Fox Network.
It's what?
Fox.
Fox owns them?
Yes.
No, I thought they're affiliated with CBS. I thought they're CBS.
I thought it was CBS too.
No, I think they're Fox.
No, well, see, Fox already has, you know, they have, you know, the Fox Network. They have Fox News,
Fox Sports,
and you know, we have Fox Sports. What else? They have the Paramount. Now, here's the thing: maybe they have some similar stockholders, but I think that the old big three that we're used to, we all grew up with. Basically, NBC has Peacock. ABC has, like, Hulu, ESPN, and one other. And I was under the impression that CBS did Paramount. And then basically Fox has some of the other stuff, like, of course, Fox, you know, the Fox Network. And see, I think they also own parts of some of those smaller ones, like the CW and MyTV or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, everybody, you know, basically, for lack of a better word, like all the pro teams have a throwback jersey. Basically, the three big networks that we all grew up watching as kids, and now they all have a fallback. As a matter of fact, with NBC, they also own part of, I believe, USA Network as well, because we saw how with the Olympics and some of the other sporting events that they've had over the years, they will ferret some of them out too. We saw that with the hockey. When the NBC Sports Network was still around, but it's you know, we saw them both in. We saw it with Paramount this year, and we also saw it with Peacock. So they know. I mean, so basically, they won't have to put the Super Bowl on pay per view. They basically already sort of similar. They've already done it in sort of a backhanded way, because the money that they don't make off of the U.S. sales, they make a killing on in foreign sales.
Which is why the Paramount purchase was disturbing. I mean, they showed this was one game. It wasn't a season or a group of games. It wasn't anything that they could bundle. It was one fucking game. And they made $500 million in clear profit. Because they made sure that you couldn't stream the game unless it was through Paramount. And when you added it all up, it came close to $600 million. I mean, what are you going to do nowadays? What kind of business or thing can you enter where you make a 500% profit in one day or one weekend? I mean, you don't do that shit.
That's the one sport that you can do it in too, the NFL.
Yeah, exactly.
You wouldn't be able to do that. You probably wouldn't be able to do that with baseball. It's funny. The NBA was actually the first league that started pushing their product overseas. But I don't think that I don't think the NBA Finals or the not even All-Star Weekend, I don't think, would be, you can really sell like that anymore.
It's true.
Yeah, the only possible thing, excuse me, would be the World Cup. But see, the World Cup actually is still the one major sporting event that everyone can watch on free TV.
Yeah. Well, when you look at it this way, free TV sounds like jumbo shrimp. It's an oxymoron.
That's
there's
for
nothing
sure.
Free. There's nothing free on free TV anymore. You're going to pay one way or another. And that Paramount example was one way of showing that when, not if, but when the Super Bowl goes pay-per-view, I will not be a football fan anymore. I will not.
Well, I think it's coming real soon.
I think you're right, but the greedy bastard factor notwithstanding, they're trying to decide how they're going to divvy this up. We know next year there'll be more games played in Germany. There'll be more of an effort to establish their network to include Europe. And there may be expansion. We don't know yet, but we know that the Jacksonville Jaguars are England's team for now with the owner Shad Khan.
You know,
one way or another, we don't see this.
I don't know. I think it would be, you know, and again, I'm just speaking to some, you know, I don't think it can really expand anymore team-wise. I mean, you've got 32 teams. You already have an imbalanced schedule to a certain extent because you have the seven games, the 17 games. Why, you know, I mean, yes, we know the greedy bastard factor is always there, but I think at this point in time right now, they would really be killing the golden goose if they added, even if they made it 34. It's like,
yeah, you're right about that. But golden geese have always been on the NFL's menu ever since they were able to do fantasy football and the draft and turn these things into literal streams of income. I have Patrick Farrar with me, and Patrick, we want to know straight up, did you bet on the Detroit Lions to make the Super Bowl?
No. How's everybody doing? I'm speaking to halftime. I'll tell you this much, Tony. That's not what's going to happen. You know why they did this, man? They have a summer league that's from somebody else.
Especially now that they've merged,
And guess what else, Tony? They want to do it.
I still think they want to do 20 weeks. I still think they want to do 20 weeks.
They want some of that out of country money. They want to from what I understand, they want to beat the NBA for a team out of the country. I don't know if they will, but that's what they like to do. Because Mexico so well, Germany so well, you know, your teams are playing two games next week or next year over in Germany and overseas. So
now I don't know if you guys caught this on Sunday. Did you catch the 30-second thing where they said coming on Super Bowl Sunday? And they showed a bunch of players over in Accra, Ghana. So it looks like there's going to be a game in the motherland next year, I guess.
Anywhere they can make money is where they're going to do this. And, you know, the greedy bastard factor is alive and well because they don't care how they make the money. They care about making the money, period.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Let me tell you now.
Well, I have you gentlemen up at bat. I have to ask you a couple of things because we know Jackie Robinson's birthday is coming soon. We found out that his statue was vandalized in Kansas City. It was supposedly torn up, burned, and shattered.
Well, it was torn up, burned. I saw
in several pieces. It's like, it was like burning a cross. The fuck is going on in Kansas City?
And they've already raised $140,000 for a new one.
Thank goodness. Yeah, I saw that. That's good. But but again, you know, look, we're still and see, somebody always tried to say, "Oh, this was random." No, they knew exactly the symbolism. They knew exactly the symbolism. Exactly.
Yeah.
They knew of the symbolism involved in all of this. So please don't literally don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. But it just reflects the climate in this country. You know, they still. As much as they try to lord up Jackie Robinson, they still look at black athletes as subservient, no matter who they are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we know for a fact the time has come where they'll get on the horn and tell everybody to buy 42 jerseys to celebrate the life of Jackie Robinson, when in death they violate this guy by tearing his statue out. And we know this is a mindset and a byproduct of the fostering, I should say festering, resentment and hatred that has been part of the society. And Eric,
what's up, fellas?
The fact that Jackie Robinson does not get to go to bat because they throw a statue down.
Mm-hmm.
It's how can I say? It's a violation.
That's a typical ritual. I mean, every time, and this is just all across the country for all people, it's just not publicized and talked about. For example, Fred Hampton Jr., every time his birthday, his grave site gets shot up. So
yes,
it's not unusual. And it's just not relegated to athletes. They're not going to deface a Shaq or a Magic statue, correct? But, you know, Jackie Robinson had a different... Well, you know, real quickly, it's what they stand for, right? You know, in terms of, you know, Jordan's statue's been out of Chicago forever, untouched, is what Jackie Robinson stood for. So, in other words, they make declarations of impact of who to terrorize and assault, right? And it's just what it is ritualistically wise. It always happens. So if you name the, you know, brother who, quote unquote, was considered anything along the line of freedom fighter, not, you know, dunking basketballs, right? Jackie Robinson was like breakthroughs in many capacities, right? So in other words, with all the Civil War statues coming down and all the kind of stuff like that, it's just what it is, you know. And again, you're not going to, you know, speaking to the moral fiber of people who don't have moral fiber when it comes down to that, it's a waste of time, you know. Like, oh, they keep doing it. I mean, basically, we know the nature of who does what and what their ilk is, so it's non-surprising, but there's people who are in those cultures. It's, I mean, again, Bernice King, as recently as, what, last week, a few weeks ago when her brother Dexter died, talked about a conversation with her mother, and she said, listen, the rest of your lives are going to keep assassinating your father over and over again. So this is what it is, you know, in this country. You know, when you have that ilk of people and you know what they do, and, you know, when people come around, oh, they're such and such a good person, whatever they mean. Well, do they have the John Brown stance? No, they don't. They're not going to rally with you and rifle up. Right, so if someone's not having that disposition to be all in, they're not really all in. And in a world where we look around the planet and we see, you know, what's happening in the Congo, and we see what's happening in Palestine, and we see what's happening in places like that, it's mayhem. happening all over the place with people of, you know, cultural relation, ethnic cleansing, things of that sort here. So here in America, where it may not be that detailed because people are so comatose to issues and things of that matter, anyone who has stood up, quote unquote, with the great title called freedom fighter, right, they get assaulted, they get attacked, they get abused over and over again. They'll continue to write books, they'll continue to defame. And the ballot of a warrior is that you accept these things, you know these things. It's a statue ultimately, but it's a symbol of something that broke through, stood up against a lot of racial oppression, did some immediate breakthroughs. But then when we look at the legacy, which is great, but we see how people are responding to the legacy and how they're responding and not really respecting things, you know, fully, right? I mean, we see Martin Luther King is like, you know, whenever I see them, we're having a Martin Luther King sale. Who does that support? Martin Luther King wasn't supporting those sales of automobiles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Martin Luther King Day wasn't about six games in the NBA, afternoon games late.
Mm-hmm.
And then they always end the game in Memphis. Why do you end the game in Memphis when that's where he was slaughtered? I mean, I've never liked that.
Yeah.
That's been a personal violation that has always
beyond.
Rushed my last name.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not Atlanta. I mean, I can deal with the, you know, the birthplace thing, right?
That's,
you know, I mean, if you, I mean,
I
can deal with that. I mean, but, you know, that Memphis thing
and
the chicanery that took place there at the Lorraine Motel, and then people say, oh, yeah, we visit the Lorraine Motel. I mean, so the dash from his birthday to the dad, you know, 39 to 68, right, whatever his birthday time frame, he'd be 95 now. So whoever can do the math, that's what it would be. 29, again, I guess he was born then. And so if you look at the time frame, I mean, does it end up in Lorraine Motel, where it was clearly a setup, been, you know what I mean, for, you know, for an assassination?
Yeah.
It's just these things that cause no thinking, right? And, you know, of certain things. And, you know, I don't really want to get on no bandwagon of, you know, weighing in, you know, but those who are conscious, we see these things and we look at what's taking place and we see what's taking place, you know, all over the place. And the lack of historical knowingness and knowledge about what's taking place. And then to just see how the masses just ride shotgun and they just continue to disrespect, you know, what took place where they're not positioned to get $1 million contracts and this, that, and the other. All what was laid down by these people's lives. So, you know, yeah, you're going to always have that with freedom fighters, but freedom fighters aren't punks. They deal with what comes up. It's a statue. You can rebuild the statue, but man, the man was more than a statue.
Absolutely.
He was more than a statue. While I have my Midland brothers with me, I have to break out a story that was extremely disturbing to me. It had to do with the Canadian junior hockey team in 2018 in Ontario.
Oh, man.
Some of these punks ran a train on a young lady in London, Ontario. It was ruled a civil case
they
of sexual
assaulted this person.
Sexual
Damn.
Assault.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of like put on the back bench for a while, and now it has come out full bore that she was violated and charges are forcing some of the NHL players who were involved to take a chill pill and, well, avoid jail, frankly, because two members of the New Jersey Devils, Calfoot and McLeod, and the starting goaltender for the Philadelphia Flyers, Carter Hart, and Dylan Dubé of the Calgary Flames are all sitting out for a while. They got leaves of absence. That's what they put it. Leaves of absence. Instead of being in fucking jail for what they did. There were supposedly eight players involved. But two things you got to think about. Junior hockey is part of hockey overall in Canada. And, of course, it's part of the culture. It's ingrained in there. So it's woven in. And from an aesthetic standpoint, hockey players are given kind of grace that other sports stars and other athletes aren't given. When you're 16 and 15 years old, you can make money as a hockey player. If you're playing juniors, you're getting paid. a 15 or 16 year old football player, you're not getting paid, not yet anyway, but it's a long way off. And because of that, there's an entitlement that comes with that. When the juniors are in effect, it's a big deal. It's a major event in Canada, and countries from all over the world are involved in this. So the Canadian juniors is one step away from stepping up to the next level, be it the NHL or the Olympics. And the long and short of it is, these guys took advantage of their whiteness and ran a train on a girl and didn't get caught. And when they did get caught, they didn't, you know, they spanked them on the hand. Nobody did hard time, which is what they should have done.
Well, that, I mean, the Hockey Association in Canada, right, they had major pedophilia problems for years that have come to light, correct? So, you know, that whole lane of youth sports and things that have taken place or what's done, Canada, you know, hockey system has been laced with major pedophilia violations for years. And
that's true.
And they were broke, so it's no thing. We've seen the same thing in the AAU environment, you know, in basketball at Disneyland. There was major pedophilia ring. There's a prominent New York church. Did I say Riverside? Yeah, I did say Riverside. They had a real prominent AAU. I forgot his name. The guy that ran it, some Jew, some lawyer, you know, and the young brothers that came through there. Now, there's some people affiliated with that whole process. They've turned out a lot of NBA players, but the trade-off
they
is
were
for those
dirty
who don't.
For real. Yes.
Rotten, beyond rotten and dirty, like Canada's youth hockey, like we've seen with Beckham in youth soccer in the UK, right? He talks about his experiences there. This has happened all the time with these particular setups. Let's not get into the Boy Scouts, right? So we can step outside that realm. Of course, the Catholic Church. So these organizations who round up youth, Sandusky included, who round up these set of these youth camps, vulnerable people, guys striving to be pro athletes through the soccer system. How many of these athletes that are, you know, skating, you know, from the Canadian sector, we've seen it overseas in Europe, were abused. Many of them, you know. Kenny Anderson, who's the head coach of Fisk University, right, out of Queens, Archbishop Malloy, Georgia Tech, right? He was abused in those circles, you know, coming up as a youth. And he was what, one of the top players in the nation. There was a recent audio tape that was out there where Donovan Mitchell, you know, when he was going through the AAU ranks, right? Now he's a star with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And this AAU coach is using a lot of really sexually, you know, metaphorical language when talking to him as a youth that was recorded that is beyond heinous. You know, and so a lot of these people disempowered, want to go pro, have that dream. And we know about the entertainment industry and all that's come out in that realm. This is just par for the course. In all these sectors, you know, it's contaminated. If you can get through those cycles without doing that, that's terrible. And then not to mention, you know, the abusive parts that take place that you just mentioned that's just been part and parcel for many years. And there's so many stories like that just tucked away. People just don't want ever to come out, right? But if you weren't protecting people coming up through those cycles, that's why I say it's a very tainted world. People have this glamour zone about the entertainment industry, about sports and the youth sports and coming up and then just making it through. You know, if you don't have the right guardianship, which many don't, if you don't have the right guardianship, it's very difficult to not deal with all these fucking predators on the come up in all these different sanctions.
That's
yes, I'm all ears. I'm back in. Go ahead.
There was one aspect, not to cut you off, there was one aspect that was particularly disturbing where they said that these members of the Canadian junior team met this girl. Her name, her initials rather were EM, in a bar. Now, first of all, what the fuck are teenagers doing in a bar? You know, they got no business being there, and you got to wonder Why are you there, and what are you there for? And supposedly one player had consensual sex with this young lady, but then they called up others and they said, get on board, we're going to ride the train. And that's what they did. They ran a train.
I mean,
on
savages. I mean, these are savages. Call them what they are. They're savages. Now, hockey players are fucking savages.
It's disgusting. And as all this played out, you know, it was swept under the rug because it's now 2024. Carter Hart is playing and starting for the Philadelphia Flyers in goal. Now, the Flyers have an okay season so far, but why did it take so long for them to tell Carter, you know what, something's come up and you may have to sit down for a while. You know, they knew this has been a situation where players are being protected. And even when the most heinous shit comes out, they're not looking to fuck with them. They're looking to protect them.
Well, it's the brand, right? I mean, the thing is why, I mean, Illinois University basketball, right? There's a guy, Shannon, you know, that's plays on a team, and he got suspended for a rape charge in Kansas, correct? And he got arrested. He had to go there. He went to the Kansas football game on his own, on the University of Kansas, and he had a rape charge. Now, again, okay, of course, you know, innocent to proven guilty, right? Yeah, you know, they put, you know, they get an injunction. He posts bail. They, you know, Illinois University suspends him from the team, and then they get a court injunction, so now he can play. So he missed like 5-6 games. Allegedly, he can be part of team activities, but he was being trained by the athletic trainers to stay up in condition. And then, what's really an interesting state of today's realm, you know, he returns to Illinois basketball. And remember, he's got a rape charge hanging over his head. He's got arrested for a rape charge. He's back on the floor. Now, of course, the fans are in an eerie position. You see some of the women, student body, that they're clapping. But what are they clapping for? This guy's got a rape charge over his head. And he's out there playing with a rape charge. You know, it hasn't been cleared yet, but just the injunction has him playing. Why is he even on the floor when you have that kind of legal situation hanging over your head? Well, yeah, you can support the concept of innocent to proven guilty, and he should be out there. But it's the fact that this is a piece that maybe a projected first-round pick or whatever it may be, that if he's going to bring the economic entity to whatever it is and the taxation that comes with his name, it has more value to have him in there as a product than as a person. And it's really heinous to watch this stuff these days.
It is heinous. Gary,
it's, you know, I mean, the guy from, what, Alabama last year, remember, you know, he was law enforcement said he was the one of the young lady killed on campus behind something. Another player got arrested. But, you know, police stated that the person who brought the gun to the dance, you know, or, you know, who brought it where the person got killed was this player who was a top pick in the NBA draft. He's still playing, you know, in Carolina right now. And the thing is, it's still not a settled case. But when I've seen this, you know, this person with that kind of case, as well as this most recent story, be out on the floor right now, it's just it's a really interesting low-down kind of environment. Because if you see yourself as a head coach of a team, and you set a standard of conduct, right, and a player in his best interest is going to have some legal issues out there, I mean, I wouldn't be apt until, you know, want to play the player. All coaches innocent to proven guilty. So, well, no, he's got some legal situation he needs to handle. You know, let's keep that as a focus. But right now, based on team player conduct, I can't suit him up.
Yeah, exactly. You get the impression that in every sport, no one gets away clean. Like you said, there's been disturbing amateur action
in
the infrastructure that has affected how pros get to the NBA, how talent is evaluated from the amateur levels on up. And we've seen sex scandals become connected with baseball and hockey, and now basketball. We know we see it in football to a lesser degree. But, Gary, what bothers you most is the fact that these kids thought enough to, like, go fuck some kid at a bar when they have no business being in the bar in the first place.
Well, my experience is that you, I saw athletes who were underage at bars, and it was okay. See, the thing, it was okay with the coach. I was thinking, wait a minute, how can I be okay with the coach when you represent SIU?
Uh-huh.
I never understood that. How a coach can let these kids do this. And you know what's going on. So he can't say, oh, I didn't know anything. Yeah, you know where all those kids go? So you guys, at the beginning of the season, you say A, B, C, and D. This is what you guys do. And if you break the law, you don't play.
Well, see, this is what I mean by the entitlement factor. They knew nothing was going to happen to them. If they felt they could go ahead and pick up somebody and get some ass, nothing was going to happen to them. If they felt they could call up teammates and say, I got some pussy going on in the room here, and everybody come and get some, and nothing was going to happen to them. Remember, this all happened.
Michael, it goes both ways, too. You have some young women who are out to aim at these players. They know who they are.
I don't doubt that.
And where they go, and they get them.
I don't doubt that.
I mean, there's so many, you know, there's never going to be no one way, no matter what. Are there groupies? Sure. I mean, you know, that's a known fact. I mean, there's groupie sites out there that have more dossiers than the player than the league does, you know, in terms of their habits,
yep,
things they're into, and personal stuff. That's, mm-hmm, you know, and now it's a little more public. They have these things called OnlyFans and Instagram, and,
yep,
you know, players find chicks on Instagram, and everyone can rework their title. And then when things go bad, like Zion Williams, they start outing stuff. It's just stupidity at the highest ilk. That's the same thing that, where was Deshaun Fowler finding his masseuses? Instagram. Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Right? You know, and so, you, in other words, having been in these environments and knowing, you know, how things could get unsavory pretty quick. Sure, are there groupies? Absolutely. Has it gotten super sophisticated? Absolutely. And so there's truth there. However, when you come up through these ranks and you're going to these institutions, the key is getting something where you're not beholden. It's a great scene that people can connect to, that they want to connect to what we're talking about in He Got Game, right? You know, Denzel, Ray Allen, the He Got Game scene, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And he pulls Jesus, his son, Jake and Jesus. So Jake's Denzel, Jesus is Ray, the high school prospect, All-American out of Coney Island. He pulls his son aside. And he says, son, you know, I don't want you to be beholden to anything. You haven't done anything, have you? You
mm-hmm.
see, so they get you to be beholden. So when you make these moves, the adults who are the coaches, now you're beholden to them because they know the heinous shit you just did. So what else are you going to do? In that world, it's about who can get the papers, who can get the docs, who can get the documentation, who can get the tapes, who can get the DNA sample. And they'll hold it against you over your head the rest of your life. You know, and so the moment you don't act right or pay up, you know, then they're going to out you. You know, that's what, you know, Tiger Gossett did.
This is what makes me wonder about LeBron James before LeBron became the cash cow and all the other shit. When he was an amateur, how much and how often and how intently were they following him? How much
they broke it? The dude had a Hummer in high school, so there's Beholden number one. Sonny Vaccaro and all these dudes, and you sign with Nike, they got you right there. So he's Beholden, right? So this is what it is, right? They'll break you off. You'll do your thing. You'll get the Nike contract. No one's immune from the Beholden. How much a person may like a certain athlete and want to rave about this, if you think they're moving to the Billionaire's Boy Club on a free pass just on talent alone and being smart, wow, is all I can say.
Well, it
doesn't happen. Does not happen. All right. And you got to break it up. You've got to render to Caesar. Then you render to Caesar. You play the game correctly. You stay clean. You can maneuver within the system. And so much of that was shown when, and people, you know, like I said, they got to get off the fanboy and get on the business too, because the fanboy is going to dilute their mindset every single time. The moment you go back to Cleveland after everything Dan Gilbert says to you, I'm sorry.
Yep.
That's exactly
right. Anyone who can come and justify it, oh, he was doing it for the city. All right, you and Mary Poppins and the rest of those Fantasia books you're into, I'm out. You know, you can have that thought process.
Boy, you're so right. I remember when our brother Travis said that LeBron was coming back to Cleveland. I couldn't believe it. I was like, wait a fuck.
Everybody, I mean, you're Beholden. It was a trade-off. There's no special breaking Rick Bucher news crap.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody could see that. That's the way that lane is played. That was no breaking news. That was just basically like, listen, the brother, the dude that owns the Miami Heat, Harrison, dude that runs the cruise lines, owns those cruise ships, right? And Dan Gilbert worship at the same altar. Part of LeBron's mentorship leadership group is Hasidic, whatever it means. He worships at the same altar as well. That's his circle. Okay? You know, and I don't want to go into all that, but it's so openly known to those who know. Does that denigrate LeBron James? No, it doesn't denigrate LeBron James. The athlete, the basketball player, right? Because that's how he's predominantly dealt with, right? He does some side stuff, but basketball floats his shit. And so, in other words, he made it real quickly, Gary, before you cut me off. So with that being said, you know, you can have the floor in the next 20 seconds, trust me. So with all those things being said, these are all connected dots. No one wants to deal with the connected dots. Does that make him a bad person? Does that make him, you know, someone that's done the wrong thing? No, that's the world in which he has to strive it and how you maneuver within that world. And he's done that.
Well, I ask you is, when LeBron James went to Miami, Indiana, Chicago, Milwaukee, and Cleveland all lost $3 million each. Okay? I'm thinking these guys had a meeting. Somebody said, hey, we got to bring that Negro back up here. Okay.
Well, you know, I mean, it's never what it appears to be, number one, right? Never what it appears to be. It was just a situation that took place that when you're a player of that largesse, there's things that happen back to a vaccine. He decided to make the run to Miami, get out of Cleveland. New York was a big player in that at the time. Yep. Remember, New York, the Knicks really wanted LeBron to come to the Knicks. Yep. And he chose Miami, you know, for business reasons because he had a relationship with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, right? That was the other key component in his decision to go there. And then Pat Rowley was very influential at the time as well, and he was a young man that just needed to shift his equation, and he did. But the way that he was dealt with where, you know, I mean, Dan Gilbert was the language he put out there. He was basically putting out runaway slave language when he left.
Yes, yes.
Straight up. And when he went back to Cleveland, that was one of the worst displays of fandom I've ever seen ever for an athlete. The way they razzed him and harassed him, not even from to the point, even when he entered the building and who could have come into the building, his group, he was literally, towards they burned his jersey 4,000,000 times over.
And you went
back. Yep. Now, okay, you can say, oh, I'm going to do it for the city. No, it's a business deal, how shit works. You're beholden, man. You're not immune. Those who are not beholden, they don't stay in the league long. They can't make that, like, shit, we can't work with dude. And they don't care what your talent level is. The first time T.O. and Iverson got hurt, they were done. Nobody was ever going to sign them.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. I mean, look at Cam. He wasn't beholden. Look what happened to him. He had 2 years left. Kaepernick?
Yep.
I mean, those who are going to do that level outside of, they don't stay around. They can't get back out there no matter what their talent level or how much talent they have left. But when you're beholden and you can move the needle and you're committed to doing so, you can have what you can have with that, and that's part of the process. And that's where I always say, you know, I'm careful about details. It's not in our conversation. This is really light work conversation because everything can be researched and found out. But behind scenes stuff, it's like I'm not here to blow someone's fanboy view of an athlete. If you want to see this person as the ultimate stand-up at every capacity and did not cut its side deal, you can have that thought process. But the side deal was cut.
You know, you just touched on an aspect that we don't really bring out to light. Now, hockey players can make money at an earlier age. I mean, you're playing juniors, 15, 16, you can get a contract. I can remember a kid named Suzanne Lafave, who was 15 years old, 6'2", 220. He's playing in the juniors and getting paid. He was considered the next. Now, he didn't make much more of his pro career because he didn't have much of one when he made it to Winnipeg. But the bottom line was he got there. And with these juniors, there's an entitlement aspect that's included. They are believed to be beyond it all because they're earning a living. And I don't mean just a couple hundred bucks here and there. If you played in juniors, you can make a significant amount of money. Now, you may not make seven figures or anything like that, but you'll do all right if you've been there long enough. And you're younger. A person at 15 and 16 can make money playing professional hockey. A kid, 15, 16, cannot do that in the United States. We saw it come close with the kid from Oklahoma, you know, but that's never happened here. And it really isn't as simple as black and white. It's not going to be something where money is going to dictate just how much pressure is going to be made on people to come across. Although in Canada, because of the cultural aspect of hockey, these kids are embraced. They're looked at as like young princes, and they're treated and given a cushion that allows them to get away with a lot more shit than they would if they were just regular citizens.
The unfortunate part about that, you know, when you coach youth athletes, prep athletes, you know, people in the come up and have had an opportunity to kind of counsel and see what it's going to take as young people go up and they rise to the pro ranks. And me personally having a lot of direct experience in that, you want to have a conversation with them about integrity no matter what, because you can't compromise your integrity. So if you're a so-called, like you mentioned, young prince, but you have the character, you know, of a doormat, you're not going to last long, and it's not going to be a good life long term. So you have to have some fiber. You're going to still have that capacity as well. And what we're seeing in today's world is like we're talking about people who have criminal charges hanging over their head, again, innocent to proven guilty, yet they still linger. These coaches don't give a fuck. They just need them out in the court to play, period. We can see that. It's really specific to the sport. They're not talking to them after the game. They're not saying, oh, we're going to go to counseling. You know, hey, he's working on these things, you know, personally. We've got him a life coach. No, be at practice at 2 o'clock. Just stay out of trouble between here and practice. Go to class. That's it. Yeah, I remember Urban Meyer. You know, they had this show on Urban Meyer when he was at the University of Florida. I think it was like a Netflix show. Kind of interesting. Uh-huh. You can sit through the bullshit, right? Yeah. And the players are talking. The players who were playing for him during that time when he had his run, you know, they blew up and all the trimmings that were coming with that. And the guy, the players, was one player, I can't remember his name, plays linebacker. He played linebacker for the Patriots, right? He was at Florida at the time, you know.
Right.
And they had asked him, you know, how did you deal with all the success, right? And after y'all won the national championship, dude was like, yeah, I was wilded, right? Straight up. I'm wilded, you know. I could go places. Mm-hmm. They recognize me. I eat free, and, you know, and I'm just taking advantage of everything coming my way. And he said that they asked him, so, well, how did the coach deal with it? And he said, Meyer would come up to him and say, because he would show up to practice on time, and he'd be out there on Saturday kicking ass. He said, Meyer would check, how Meyer checked in on him was, are you living right?
Exactly. And you know, the level of vitriol changes when it comes to the sport. If you remember, Wayne Gretzky was 17 years old when he played for the Indianapolis Racers of the WHA. Edmonton bought out his contract, and we know he was a star for Edmonton and a star for the league for years until the trade was made to send him to Los Angeles. He opened up the L.A. and the California market, and two more franchises became real because of Gretzky's importance. But I have not heard of any Edmonton fan that said they were going to burn their fucking jersey because Gretzky decided to move to L.A. or Oakland or wherever the fuck, or New York or anything like that. The level of vitriol was almost non-existent. I mean, it was like in the LeBron situation, it was like, nigga, how
well,
dare
owner,
you
the
do
owner
that?
Did not come out and lambaste him. Right,
yes.
You know, as well. And when he went back to Cleveland, again, everyone had the green light to be as nasty and ugly as they could to him. And he had to deal with that inside and outside the arena. And anyone who wants to go to the videotape, just do the history. It was not a good thing. He's a native of that city. He started his career there. He put them on the popularity map. He gave these people a reason to buy season tickets. And because he chose to make a business decision to play in another city and team, which he was entitled to do based on a collective bargaining agreement and his own free will, like if you want to take a new job, if you want to leave here and work with another organization in this system and culture, you're entitled to do so wherever that may be on the planet. And yet you can't do that as an NBA player. And he showed up, and the owner set the bar high for them to give it to him, a native son, and then to go back after that and deliver and play within that environment. That's your free will choice. Your opinion has nothing to do with mine. You know, you're a grown man. You make it your way. You do certain things like that. But I don't know from any aspect of how I've been raised by those in the past, where anyone who deals with you that particular should ever get another red cent off you.
Thank you. That's exactly right.
And you did it. And you cannot let that slide and forget about it on some, you know, magic carpet fanboy bullshit. That's what took place.
That's exactly what took place. When Gretzky was traded, the owner of the Edmonton Oilers, Peter Pocklington, said, well, you know, if he's got to go, he's got to go. Thank you for doing what you did for Edmonton, because he put a lot of hardware, Oilers won Stanley Cups, et cetera, et cetera. And Gretzky became an ambassador for the sport. But LeBron was vilified for doing what he did so very well. Here's a guy who kept his nose clean. He was about 2 a.m. in the morning. He wasn't fucking 8-year-olds. He wasn't in the motel. fucking violating the law. He wasn't doing drugs. He wasn't running dirty. And all they did was piss on him for everything he had done, because how dare you, you black motherfucker, you're leaving us high and dry, and we want to make more money off you and stay greedy, and we can't do that because you decided to leave.
You know, I mean, Cleveland ownership, he's a made man in the league. How many number one draft picks did he have after, like, 1,000,002?
Something
right,
like
he had
that.
All these first round picks. Mm-hmm. He was winning the lottery,
yep.
Left, right, front, and center.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Juiced in. It's a business deal to go back to Cleveland. That's a league generated. David Stern ran, Gilbert connected. You're coming back this way. Mickey Arison signed off. We're all in the same gang. Ultimately, this is good for our pockets. Let's make this thing happen. Period.
Right.
And again,
mm-hmm.
Does that make you a criminal? Does that make you, you know, something less than any? No, I mean, you do as you see fit as a grown man. However, the reality is when you do the gauges, when you make a decision like that, it shows you're playing the game, you're part and parcel, you're rendering unto sinner. Caesar, period. No other way to look at it. Now you can't, we're going to do this for the team. Oh, we're going to do this. That's fine. I mean, that's been the narrative. That's a nursery rhyme.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Gary, do you find that LeBron had been victimized because of his celebrity, or was this fan induced because of all the hype before he got here?
It was I before he got here. When he was in high school, I had never seen a high school player before that as much as he was.
Uh-huh.
So it was a surprise to me that LeBron James is popular. And now, I want to see now because LeBron's kids and all the kids of athletes better be careful because we got to live too.
That's true. There's a reality show involving Bronny, one of his sons, where he's playing for a high school team, and they've been following him.
Sierra Canyon.
Thank you. Yeah, exactly. And it's like, why are you doing this? It's like all these kids are sons of or connected with people who are owners in the league or famous people of some sort. And it's like they're not just some sort of pickup team. They try to turn them into reality stars before they even pick up a college or pro ball. And I look at this man and say, how far have they gone? How bad is this going to get? Because they're one scandal away from destroying everything. And
first of all, you still have to be good enough, no matter who your parent is. You know, and Dwayne Wade had a son, you know, Zaire Wade, and, you know, he played G League. He just was not an NBA player. You know, he's played hard. He's worked hard. Even with Wade being in the Utah Jazz ownership booth and playing with the Utah Jazz G League team, his son, you know, nice kid. You know, he puts in the effort. He's not a bad ball player. He's just not an NBA player. And so there's a lot of that taking place and going on. But what's new about that when you look at the Chattel system? When you breed and you put them back through the whole loop, no one wants to make that connection. If you're not good enough to play and you sell the hoop dreams, and very few of these players are good enough to play. I mean, Bronny is being pushed. You know, he's not a dazzling college star. He may never be a college All-American. He may never be an all-conference player at best, to be frank, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but LeBron being who he is and to make money machinations of finance, can he get a roster just to have that thing? I mean, he's not Ken Griffey Jr. You know, so the thing being is when you look at how that works and the networks and the pushing in the basketball and the reality TV concept, sure, they're going to push those narratives and have these stories and have all these followings, but again, you have to have the skill set to play. I mean, Joe Bryant, with Kobe's father, Kobe was on a different level. You know, I mean, better than his dad. Most players who have these longevity careers typically, and there's a lot of NBA players out there who had a father that played, like Gerald Henderson Jr. I mean, the list goes on. We could probably just keep giving those kind of names up that are impact players, but they're not all-star players, right? They're in the league. They're good enough to be a player within the National Basketball Association. Kenyon Martin Jr.'s son, you know, his son plays in the NBA. And there's others, you know, out there who are children of NBA parents, players who are players. So they have the access. You know, I mean, Steph Curry, he's better than his father, Dale, and his other brothers in the league, right? Doc Rivers' son. Went pro, you know, was an NBA player, maybe not an all-star. The rare birds are like Steph, you know, and Kobe, who were like, you know, all NBA type players who were better than their fathers, who were pretty good NBA players, not great NBA players, but good at players. They had specialties like Dale could really shoot. He's a three-point artist. So Steph picked that up, and they've been around the league a long time. So you do have, you know, the offspring factor that will go into play, but you still, and then when it comes down to NBA, regardless of your familiar connection, you still got to be able to ball out. And Bronny right now, you know, is a serviceable college player. You know, he's probably played more basketball and been around more basketball in his life than probably 90% of the college rosters in the United States.
That's probably true.
Right? You know, I mean, I'm here to say it is true, right? And so, with all the amount of basketball and, you know, he's played and we see what the final product is, I mean, you know, I mean, I wish the young man well. If that's his goal and, you know, he goes through a scenario where he develops and becomes a really good prospect and NBA player, whatever that may be, more power to him. You know, I mean, you know, and definitely want to bunt the goals. But he's had that access to the best coaches, too.
Gentlemen. Where did the aspect of burning jerseys, where did that come from?
I haven't done that research. I think that, but one thing that is clear, if you're burning crosses and you're burning jerseys, there's a parallel.
Well, to me, there's only one white player, one white player got his jersey burned. You know who that was?
Who?
Gordon Hayward. That's no the kidding. Only one I ever got his jersey burned. Everybody else was black.
You know what? I'm looking at this two ways, Gary. I'm looking at this from economics. All right. If you had a LeBron jersey when you played with Cleveland, what's that, $100 for argument's sake?
$100.
And if you have a Wayne Gretzky jersey when he was with Edmonton, I mean, 99, that's like, what, 250 with all the accoutrements that go with that. Somebody would say, fuck, I ain't wearing this. I'm not burning this shit. I spent $250 on this. I'm saving money. I have a Jerome McGinley jersey that's valued at $250. I would never burn that motherfucker. But the whole point is maybe economics would cost somebody to back the fuck up. But you cannot ignore the racial factor here. Gretzky leaves for California, and the owner and Canadians are pissed because this wasn't just an American trade or anything like that.
They didn't burn his jersey, Mike.
This was a Canadian icon leaving Canada. You know, if anybody
should
have been
mad. You know, in terms of how that rates with the balance of LeBron James, right? I mean, he went to Edmonton. That blew up Los Angeles soccer. I mean, I'm sorry, hockey.
Right.
Because, you know, L.A. is a sports town, entertainment city. And that created a bandwidth of hockey interest in Los Angeles in a warm climate state where they have no interest in things such as that until they get a branded person like Gretzky. So that made sense business-wise to have them locate to a city and build out that whole industry in that area of Southern California. So that made sense, but they were not going to torch his jerseys in Edmonton. totally different scenario. They're not even comparison to what happened with LeBron James and Gretzky. I don't see the parallels.
But what I'm saying is that here's a young man who had everything ahead of him. He was allowed to do all this, and he was given clearance to do it because nobody wanted to interfere with the fact that he was the Golden Goose. They knew as far as 17 years old.
He's a great player, right? You know, I mean, he's a great player.
Gretzky is going
to
be,
you know, I mean, and he was clean cut. He really, there's no cutting edge to him in terms of, like, the popularity. I mean, he was not on the cover of Sports Illustrated like LeBron James at 16 or whatever it was. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And so it's like a different kind of scenario. But Gretzky is a great player. I mean, he really helped the Los Angeles. They're not going to burn that and do anything negligible in Edmonton because they appreciate his contribution.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That cultural spike that Gretzky created by helping Edmonton win four Stanley Cups in a row was because of the fact that he was who he was. I have to argue that, let's just say, Edmonton had Gretzky and they had Grant Fuhr. We know Grant Fuhr is black. If Grant Fuhr had been a forward instead of a goaltender, would Edmonton have been revered at the same level, Gary, as they would be? You know, would Edmonton be famous because Grant Fuhr was a high-scoring forward for Edmonton instead of the goaltender?
No. No, because he's black.
Exactly. So
he's a great, I mean, I look at it, you know, in a different way as well. His skill set was goaltender.
Yeah.
Someone's got to block the net, you know,
right.
And he was a phenomenal goaltender. He did exceptional.
Right.
He was a key component. You've got to have defense, which was Grant Fuhr. You know, Gretzky was bringing the offense and everything else, but he was a silent superstar.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't a verbal transcendent person in that particular. He's kind of, you know, almost just really have no charisma at all, Gretzky, to be frank.
No.
Great hockey player,
yeah.
Period. But he had no other, you know, I mean, Gretzky wasn't setting the world on fire with advertisements and the world, you know, in comparison to someone like LeBron James. They're not even on the same equilibrium.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when Gretzky came to L.A., And then he got traded to St. Louis.
Did he play with the Rangers?
Yes, he did.
He did? Okay, I thought he played with the Rangers.
When he got traded to St. Louis, he thought, I'll go to New York. And when he went to New York, everybody paid attention.
They love
it's New York. I mean, you know, I mean, it's the business. LeBron in New York would have been insane. He chose Miami.
LeBron in New York because of
his relationship with, you know, Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh.
And
the influence of Pat Riley. He made a great decision for himself basketball-wise. He was not winning championships in Cleveland. He had poor coaches, poor management. The Cleveland Cavalier team that went to the NBA championship with Paul Silas, the great Paul Silas, good brother, you know, rest in power. You know,
yes,
Paul Silas also came in NBA history percentage-wise during the strike season when the Bobcats had the worst record in, you know, league history winning percentage-wise. Silas was that coach. So Paul Silas has seen that level. He was a good player. The team that LeBron played on, you know, that went to the NBA Finals had to be the weakest roster in NBA history to get to a Finals.
Yep.
It was totally driven by LeBron. And he was being taught how he could not win the big one. He could not win championships. They were falling up short. He can't measure up to Jordan. He got tired of that ish. He hooked up with Wade. He hooked up with Bosh. He needed some big brothers, someone to ride to, some strong teammates because he knew it was like when he had to carry the load 24/7. And they broke through. You know, he's the one that said, we're not going to win, but one, not two, not three, not four. You know,
five,
right? And they took some championships out of that. You know, I'm taking my talents to South Beach. You know, no one could do that. Gretzky could say, I'm taking my talents to friggin' win a tag and shit.
I knew ESPN after they did that. Because they never mentioned anything about LeBron giving money to the boys' club of the Cleveland area.
Well, in fairness, there are some many athletes, and I've known them personally. Like, for example, I'll just say that Eric Armstead, a young man, I've a person I've known for when he was a youth, literally, like under 10, mm-hmm. Coached him, played basketball. He also played basketball when he went to Oregon. I coached him in hoop. His father, who runs the Sacramento mm-hmm. Pro Development League, would always have, you know, Eric, you know, play for him, this, that, and the other. So I know him at a very well level. Eric is, I think, this year, this is his fourth time. It feels like his fourth time. So I'll just say, of course, people can run down the research if they want, where he's up for, you know, Walter Payton Man of the Year for his contribution mm-hmm. to the community. Right. He puts up numbers. He drops like a quarter of a mil for these youth activities in Sacramento. And hopefully he'll win this year. But he's been up for it the last 4 years, and he's also the team captain. These are the things that young people I've talked to. Shaq Thompson, that's another young man I've known since the youth. Matt Barnes, they do tremendous things, you know. And there's many of us. I'm not going to go through all of them that have that conscientiousness. So I want to share that, yeah, LeBron's that player, and he's done these things. But I want to let you know that even his brother, like Arm, young Eric, you know, still got his career ahead of him. Tremendous impact to the community. And they're not alone. There's been players that have come and gone that have done tremendous contributions to that thing. So I know that pops up with LeBron a lot, and more power to him, this, that, and the other, and he should get the credit for it. But by no circumstance is he alone. You know, Shaq does a lot of really good things with certain things as well that he doesn't seek publicity for as well. And there's many others that don't even have the brand name of these athletes that do tremendous things in the community, conscientious-wise, and give things back that have impact that they're looking nothing for. So that's what I'm talking about, character. So there's excuselessness. The person thinks because they can ball or do something like that, they can just be a, you know, out-and-out asshole and have no accountability. Listen, they got to live the rest of their life. They're not going to last long. The people I'm talking about that do certain things like that, they're having huge impacts, influencing people at a very strong mannerisms. And half the time, Damon Lillard, you know, yeah, he's out there where you are, gee. He does tremendous stuff in the Bay Area for youth.
And he does.
Where he comes up. Jason Kidd did the same. Gary Payton did the same. I mean, I could go through like
now,
a whole
last
pass.
Absolutely.
Of CC Sabathia. You know, he's from Vallejo. He's from this area. Long-time Yankee. CC's done tremendous thing, not only out here in the West Side, but even in New York City, where he bought many years with the Yankees. CC's done tremendous thing. I mean, CC was I met him when I was still an active coach. He was a power forward for a very good Vallejo basketball team when I first laid idols. I didn't even know he was a baseball player. I first met him through basketball. So there's a lot of people that I've seen as youth, that I've communicated with youth, that had a conscience about certain things, that are branded names out there, all can be verified and bona fide, and of course that's not necessary because it's what it is, have done tremendous things. So, yes, LeBron, you know, has done these things as well community-wise, and it's really good that he has. But I thank you for sharing that, G, because it gave me an opportunity to kind of sing the banner of a lot of brothers who are doing good things out there.
That's true. There's one thing that still bothers me. I know he was that basted his first few years in the league. And when he won his championship and he said, there's three of you motherfuckers I will never speak to again. We know one was Skip Bayless. We know two was Stephen A. Smith. Who's the third guy? That's what I want to know.
I don't know who that may be, but those guys will not be running them on him with
the
interview. You are correct. He's not going to sit down and talk at every interview with any of those people.
I don't blame him, but it's like consider what damage that did. Now, we just talked about Gretzky. Gretzky was traded. He was a Canadian icon. He came to the States. He's responsible for the birth of at least three franchises.
Correct.
The NHL.
In SoCal, right? Anaheim, L.A.
And the San Jose.
San
Sharks.
Jose.
All of them got flavor because of Gretzky's presence.
Mm-hmm.
San Jose, when they came in first year in the league, they sold more shit than anybody in the league because of it. And I was impressed by that.
And that also led to the Vegas franchise.
Exactly. So indirectly, Gretzky, on top of being
the fourth one, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Made the league a shitload of money.
Don't Arizona have one too, Mike?
That's right, the Coyotes. That's five.
There's the fifth.
Yes, indeed.
Colorado too, right?
Yep, Colorado as well.
There's the
sixth. So that's
the whole west side. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. That's serious clout. And Gary, you know, the next jersey that you wear might be a jersey that was influenced by Gretzky.
It might be. I mean,
well, no, it will be because he broke the ground for the West Coast.
Yeah,
soccer and created the interest out here for sure. You know, all these franchises in a warm weather sport where there's no natural environment to be a hockey player at all on this side. You know, this is not the climate for it. And yes, he created that whole breakthrough for it by breaking through the LA market for sure. But sports memorabilia, you mentioned, you know, jersey burning things. Sports memorabilia is big business. Big business.
Yep.
A lot of money with sports memorabilia and jerseys.
Oh, yeah.
The right ones, this, that, and the other. So, and the biggest thing, back to basketball, right? One of the top features of the collective bargaining agreement, you know, a few years back when Stern and these guys were holding out, you know, and there was a shortened season during the last strike. A lot of that was about how we're going to chop up the merch.
Yeah,
that's right.
You know?
Fanatics company, I had never seen them until 2010.
Yep.
So where the Fanatics came from?
Well, you know they have been thinking about the possibility of weighing the worth of all this. I mean, right down from sports cards to decals and jerseys and everything else that went with it. I mean, when Gretzky left the Indianapolis Racers, which don't exist anymore, to go to the Edmonton Oilers, I mean, can we imagine how much an Indianapolis Racers jersey is right now, how much it's worth? Because that was his first team.
Yeah.
Anything affiliated, right? I mean, a signed hockey stick, a T-shirt, right? That was an original giveaway at a sports event. I mean, all those things have value in sports memorabilia freaks, you know. And I've seen some of these, some of that memorabilia collector stuff can be kind of really impressive. I ran into a guy in SoCal. It was the most mind-blowing collection of memorabilia I ever seen in my life. And the most when he was kind of taking me to a tour, this dude had, like, everything from, you know, Wilt's headband, you know, because he was in L.A. and was a big Lakers season ticket holder. And it wasn't really the headband as we see it, you know, which is the even wraparound. It's like the thickest part of the headband was just on his forehead, and everything else was a thin white striping, right, like piping. I was like, dang, that's totally different. I mean, this guy, I mean, did he have an entertainment memorabilia? He even had J. Edgar Hoover and Marilyn Monroe. I was just blown out. Anything Laker he had, it looked like it was $1 million. And what was interesting about this memorabilia thing, because of this incredible collector person that I ran into, and he had it in this place where, you know, it was kind of not really in a home setting. It was like in a business environment. When you see that level of memorabilia collection, and it was, I mean, you think all the Motown acts, he had all this stuff, man. I mean, if you think of it, he had it. Babe Ruth stuff, when you see all that stuff in one place, it's like you're meeting these people. It's a bizarre thing.
Yeah.
Seeing these artifacts that are authentic to the people who had it, and then being in the midst of all that memorabilia, you're actually connecting with these people. That was the most bizarre thing I had that, you know, feeling with, because these are some of their artifacts, right? So when you think about, that's at the highest level of this collective group thing, right? So it's not just that this fanboy thing that's got two or three T-shirts or whatever. So,
right.
Yeah, the merch matters. And so there's a lot of money associated with the merch. And you see with the NBA, they keep bleeding. Every team looks like they have 4,000 jerseys these days. It's the merch.
Exactly. Yeah.
Ridiculous.
It is. I mean, it's gotten a little different. That's what makes, like, the stuff from what we're talking about from the earlier days. I mean, if you walk, you know, if you run up on a pair of, you know, Clyde Frazier Pumas, original Pumas, or his jersey, because they don't water it down, it's authentic, and it's total different materials how they made with. Those things are worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
On the open market of merch.
Oh, you know what? Before we get the final thoughts, I can remember what Travis Singleton told me as we started talking about sneakers and how he got into them. And, like, there literally is a sneaker market similar to the stock market where the value of these things increases based on player, rarity, who they have the sneakers for, and everything else that goes with that. And that's something that never would have been even thought about way back in the day.
Well, if you go to YouTube and you put in the kicks market, it's all over the place, right? So if people who are into kicks, that's a knowing, that's a real broad subject matter globally that's known about for many years. For example, for many years, there were people in Japan who understand the value who would buy the original Jordan sneakers regardless of what condition they were in for certain money. So that's a long-term knowing this market that's been going on for many years in the kicks market. And it's a broad band of subject matter that many, many people participate in. If you don't pay attention to it, it seems extreme, but the hip hoppers, other people like that, they all been into this kick game for a long time. Really pretty common subject matter, to keep it 100.
Wow. Well, we are at that point where our final thoughts. Eric, lead us off if you will, please.
Yeah, not really too much to add on to, you know, the discourse. Really nothing to say. Just looking at current events that took back place in the National Football League, you know, incredible decision-making by the Detroit Lions football team in the second half. When you run the ball 20-plus times in the first half and you're just thrashing the Niners and chunk gains every time. Then you run the ball 8 times in the second half. Very fascinating decision-making by Detroit's personnel. Very, very, very.
I like
very,
that
very,
word.
Fascinating. Very, 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 very fascinating, right? The offensive coordinator in Baltimore, my goodness gracious, you couldn't have called the poorer game.
True.
My goodness. I mean, I don't know what this offensive coordinator was thinking about in terms of his game plan design and some of the plays that he was calling for short field notice. Again, very interesting decision-making processes by the coordinators in Baltimore as well as in Detroit. And then the guy in Detroit who was in line possibly for the Seahawks job and also in line for the Commander job, allegedly, he lost both jobs, returning to Detroit, allegedly because his asking price was too high. No. His play calling was so poor in the second half, people decided to push back.
You got that right. Well, you know, you put it in perspective. Somebody shot for the moon, and they missed. And you get what you get. Empty pockets. Well, the Detroit Lions had a chance to be Lions and stay Lions forever. They had a 66-year-old monkey to kick off their back, and they missed out. So they're once again putty tax, and they will remain putty tax forever. Or I should say forever.
36 years ago today, there was the Super Bowl 22.
Yep.
The Washington Football Club.
Yep.
Against the Denver Broncos.
Yep.
Second quarterback Doug Williams goes back to pass, falls down, and sprains his knee or ankle or whatever it was.
Knee.
Everybody, every African American football fan got at the same time, get up! Get up!
Get up!
Hey Gary, I know you're a very literal person and you choose your language wisely. They were like, "Get the F up!"
If you know,
That's exactly right.
Mr. Williams broke 8 Super Bowl records that day.
Yes,
he became the MVP of the Super Bowl. And guess what? At the end of the game, he did not go to Disneyland. It was the first time ever that they did not have a commercial about, I'm going to Disney World.
Exactly.
You all know why.
Mm-hmm.
They were trying to find Tiffany Smith. I'm joking,
yep.
Gary. Didn't he go for 200 yards that game, Timmy Smith?
Timmy Smith ran for .98.
.98.
And he did damage. We know they dug through for basically 300 yards and a quarter and 4 touchdowns.
He did.
And they gashed. The Denver Broncos defense.
42-10.
The Hogs.
Yeah, good old John Elway had a rough afternoon.
Yes, he did.
Psychologically more than physically.
Yeah. Barry Wilburn, who was on the Washington team and was there for one of those interceptions, I ran into him in Canada in 1994 when the British Columbia Lions won the Grey Cup over the Baltimore Stallions. And he's probably one of a very, very select few who has a Grey Cup and a Super Bowl ring in the same resume. He played very well in that game. Interesting seeing how a team could go from really shitty, because they were like 3-15 in 92, to winning a Stanley Cup. And now we're at the point where it is long over. The fix is no longer in, but we know the NFL will find a way to scam their way to another situation in San Francisco as they got who they want. Now it's up to Mahomes to make sure that the field generals hold up the end of the deal and went out and stopped this nonsense where this overblown white nonsense of quarterbacks equaling leaders, equaling superior.
And running back, Mike, the combo, the small ball
and combo. And
yeah.
Combo of running back.
It's the combo, man. It's the Purdy-McCaffrey combo. All the stuff that went on with running backs over the years, right?
That.
Brothers couldn't
That's
get
right.
signed unless you're Christian
That's
McCaffrey. Now we got
That's
Norm
right.
Van Brock Purdy, you know,
That's
going right. against the killer Mahomes.
I got to turn the radio off because he gets so bad. I got to turn the radio off. That's how bad it is out here.
Well, you know.
I can imagine.
We talk about the fact that this is just another version of white supremacy where they trap this and they trap this stuff out. For edification. We hope that Patrick Mahomes looks at this and handles it with his normal aplomb and brings on the bacon. But as far as being a Detroit resident, goodbye putty tats, because I ain't moving to Detroit. You had your chance and you blew it. So
he's an aggressive coach. He's going to go for it on fourth down.
We'll see.
Put the points on the board, bro.
He's an aggressive coach.
It's fourth and three. Yeah, this is the right call.
Exactly.
I mean, what's the dude's name that coaches the Packers? He did the same thing with Jordan Love. Put the points on the board. Jordan Love has it. I don't think he's converted one fourth and one as a rushing quarterback. That was the call.
Jordan Love has scared the shit out of San Francisco, and it looked like
he messed that game up.
And the field goal kicker fucked it up. The field goal kicker blew it for them.
But, you know, they had that fourth and one, put the points on the board. So we've seen Green Bay, right, go for fourth and one, what, inside in the so-called red zone, try to push Love over the top. They failed. Hello, Mr. Detroit coach. You go for fourth and whatever twice in the red zone. The Niners can read that crap. They already stopped Green Bay last week. You do the same thing? And you don't rush the rock, but eight times. So the times you go for it, then you throw a whack pass. That was some interesting coaching. I mean, that was some interesting decision making.
Yeah. And interesting for record sake, it's one of those nebulous words that can say a lot and not say shit at the same time. So to the pretty pet. It's going to be an interesting postseason, as you said.
Did you see the Lions players when they realized they were down 10? I mean, the Niners tied the score with 3 minutes left in the third.
Yes, they did.
Father,
I'm so glad you could come.
Excuse
the stain on the rug.
Yes.
It was hot. That was an interesting decision. It wasn't rigged. It was just something. It was just aggressive coaching.
Where's your faith, Father?
It's in the car. I'm going to get it.
Where is she?
She did that to you? Father.
You see, I told you we had nothing to worry about.
Nothing to worry about.
Let's talk to the child.
Yes, you talk to her. Did you do that, little girl?
You mustn't listen to anything she has to say.
I'm not listening.
You're a liar and a cheat and a child molester. You French kiss your dog in the mouth.
Stop the bed.
Stop the bed.
The bed must be on the floor.
The bed must be on the floor. The bed must be on the floor. The bed must be on the floor. The bed is on. My foot is on my foot.
You must continue, Father.
You must rest. The bed is on my foot.
Thank you, little girl. Here's your pea soup. Maybe now we can be friends, huh?
What do you say?
Gotcha.
a sweet gesture. You're a sweet little girl.
Jive turkey.
I have faith. I have faith. You're such a little girl.
Your mother eats kitty litter.
So what?
Your mama eats kitty litter.
Don't nobody talk about my mama. My mama.
She's such an innocent child.
Your mother sews socks with smell.
What did you say, little girl?
Your mama sews socks with smell.
Father, please, let me help you.